Complete mental collapse.
Okay, I just started recording just as you said mental collapse.
Mental collapse.
So, welcome to today's mental collapse. This is a video unlike previous videos in some ways, but also in other ways is actually quite
Very
like a
much
lot
so.
of previous videos. So this is a little bit of an ad hoc video of sorts, but I want to talk about Severance because it's a show that I like quite a lot. I like the mystery elements of it. I like the aesthetic elements of it. And the reason I started watching it was because a friend of mine basically said it was like Portal, the TV show.
And it is, yeah, The Office. I mean, this is going to be rife with spoilers. So if you don't want
Oh, yeah,
spoilers,
yep, spoilers.
spoilers
We
from
are,
here on in.
yeah, we're up to halfway through season two. So that's episode five, season two, halfway through season two. So we'll hopefully do one at the end of season two just to like do a post-mortem. But I think today I kind of want to work out what it the hell is going on because I've got some ideas, you've got some ideas, but I don't know how much we agree on them, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, we don't seem to. I mean, first of all, I think you're, because I loved season one, and it felt like one of those shows that nobody was fucking watching. I mean, people were watching clearly, but nobody in my group, like I kept banging on about it, and nobody would fucking watch it. And then finally, you watched it, not because of my, like you say, because a friend. Yeah, and the portal thing is bang on. The severed floor has, you know, a similar feel to Portal, where it's sort of temporally indistinct and very unsettling, and more so than Portal, I think, in those aspects. It's weird, it's unsettling, it's unnerving, and it's filmed in a way that accentuates that. It's made to feel not over that. I think this is what it nails. It's not overtly threatening. It's pleasant things made to feel threatening, which is, you know, corporate culture in a nutshell. It's like it's never over. I mean, it can be, but you know, that kind of corporate culture. It's overtly kind and like it's trying to help you and that kind of thing. But it's actually, you know, destroying your fucking being and soul.
And what I like about season two in particular is that we're seeing the sort of the echoing effects of that. So, for example, in season one, we saw Miss Cobell, we saw Mr. Milchick. They had very distinct roles that they were very confident in. However, with the events at the end of season one, Miss Cobell gets sidelined and Mr. Milchick gets promoted to the manager of the severed floor. And we're seeing ways in which he not only kind of struggles to fill that role, but also how he himself has this how he is impacted by this kind of corporate culture in the same way, like how he talks to Natalie. Natalie brings back the board, and Natalie, of course, great character. She's the one where she's got the board speaking to her in her ear, and she's like always very smiley, always very pleasant, always very softly spoken. But you don't know if she's going to fire you or give you a racist painting, like.
Before we get to the specificities of season two, because I think it's fair to say you're at this point during season two, you're more optimistic about the show than I am.
Yes, much more
Which
optimistic.
I have concerns, and it's the obvious. It's when I watch season one, like I say, it creates that atmosphere beautifully. It's got an interesting premise. It isn't just that premise. It builds on that premise. It does more interesting things with it. You've got the mystery of what Lumen is up to. You've got the unsettlingness of the floor. It's beautiful to watch. One of my favorite scenes in anything ever is the wellness session with obviously Miss Casey is the
Oh,
name, and
yeah.
the dude from Do the Right Thing, the older
Irving.
Irving. That scene, I love it. It's kind of Lynchian.
Yes.
But my worry was, is it just a mystery box show? And should probably be clear. I want to be clear that so Lost is kind of the epitome of mystery box shows, where it's keep introducing mysteries without any real idea of where you're going, and you kind of resolve them, but not in particularly satisfying ways, and you know, nothing feels thought out. It's just here's another mystery, here's another mystery. And it's not that I want everything answering necessarily. Even if we never find out what Lumen does, that's fine, so long as there's something feels constructed, the satisfaction to what we're finding out. Because I'm rewatching Twin Peaks, And I know that, I can't remember if it was Frost or Lynch, I think it was Frost, like, he didn't want the killer revealing in Twin Peaks. That Twin Peaks, the sort of premise is who killed Laura Palmer. But for Lynch and Frost, that wasn't the point. That was just a reason to get the characters in place, and then it's just about their weirdness. And that's fine. Like, I don't need everything answered. I mean, they did answer that in Twin Peaks, but I think it would have been better if they didn't. But my point is, I'm not saying everything has to be answered, you know, explicitly. That's not what I'm after. But you need some kind of progress or resolution or explanation of certain things. Otherwise, you just feel like you're being fucked around.
Okay, yeah.
And so season one, it introduces... Sorry, I know this is long. Season one introduces the mystery, explores it. You discover the sort of... the shape and feel of the mystery with the characters, so that's fine. Season two, I really needed it to start, you know, putting things together in some way, and so far it just hasn't. It also isn't expanding the mystery. It isn't. We're not in that phase of exploring it with the characters anymore. We really know the terms of the mystery now, so it's just here's more of what you know.
Yeah.
And that. But I want it. I'm really nervous that it's not gonna, you know, fulfill that. So that's my nervousness with it. And if I don't get something by the end of season two, I'm probably going to bail because I don't want to be strung along.
So, yes, I mean, obviously it is a mystery box show, and we all hope it lands better than Lost.
Well, distinction, mystery box, I think, is it done badly? It done in the Lost way.
Yeah,
mystery,
okay.
Yeah, so let's keep that term for the wrong way to do it.
Okay, all right, excellent. So they often refer to the work as important and mysterious. So we have a big disagreement on what's happening in the show. And I think this is a good starting point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, I think the work that they're doing is, as they say, mysterious and important. And I subscribe to the belief that they are trying to invent the technology of resurrection with the end goal of resurrecting Keir Egan. However, not necessarily the actual character of Keir Egan as existed in what, the 1800s, where it was generally sort of hinted at that he was just a snake oil salesman, you know, traveling road to road going, oh, I sell da, 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 you know, like that kind of guy. And then the mythos built around him. They're not resurrecting him as the true Keir Egan. They're resurrecting the imagined idea of Keir Egan, the you know, what they expect Keir Egan, the mythos of Keir Egan. So what I think they do in macro data refinement is they basically transfer emotions, i.e. the four humours of woe, frolic, dread, and wrath, or something like that. I forget those. And they're basically putting them into an algorithm. They're putting emotions into an algorithm. Mm. So then that algorithm can then go into the new Keir. I was going to keep calling it Keir Starmer.
Might as well be.
Oh my God. So Keir, you know, like, yeah, shell of a man type of thing. There may be other departments that are working on other facets of it, like we saw in episode 5, there was the guy from the testing floor. I think they call it the testing floor, or the mysterious elevator that goes down again, coming up and wheeling off a bunch of surgical tools, dental tools. So he might have been from the...
Because they keep talking about Keir Egan's ether factory, right?
Yes.
And which is odd in itself.
Yes.
I don't think you get rich from ether. Anyway. But and then that links to, like, early dentistry. I think there's something. Dentist tools, ether to knock people out during this. And again, that's all we've got so far. It's just that symbolic link. The reason I like what you're saying, and that could be interesting. But the reason I don't think it fits is, for me, like, the show, if it has a point at the moment, its point is corporate. You know, it's kind of ridiculing corporate culture, and it's somewhat critical of, like, how we treat labor.
Yes.
And telling the workers that their work is important and mysterious is just the kind of thing you do in an office when the person doesn't really know what they're doing. You, as their manager, you don't really know what they're doing and why it's useful. The people above you don't really know what it's doing. You just, because it's always been done, you believe it's essential.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, what you do is very important. No, like I can't explain to you what it is, but of course it's very important. I think to me it's that. It's like and to then invest it with actual importance kind of undermines that.
Yeah. Now they also parody a lot of corporate language, things like macro data refinement. What's the goat people's, like, mammalian nurturing or something like that?
Something like that,
Nourishment or yeah. So and the thing is, when you said that to me, like, or when you said that the idea of bringing Kia Egan back doesn't really make sense because it would go against the mythos of his.
His point is to be a very vague mythologized figure that doesn't really mean anything. And that mytho, you know, which company I watched a terrible movie out of morbid curiosity the other day, called The Internship, where a couple of sort of middle-aged people get an internship at Google.
Oh, that's Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson. Ha fucking hell.
And we saw it on, there's that Framed game where it's Guess the Movie from the Frames, and it was on that, and I was like, I've got that looks horrible. I've got to watch
It's
that.
horrible.
Absolutely horrible. But I learned that at Google they have a concept called googliness. Like, you know, they've defined this word like there wasn't a word in the English language which meant what they want. You know, it's googliness, and it's that kind of bullshit. It's that mythologizing empty nonsense, and the power structures in the company must know and believe that it's empty nonsense.
Yes.
Function, you know, it's religious. It's corporate culture taken to the point of religion.
Yeah.
But unlike a religion, like this dog, you know, atheists would scoff at me, but you know, there's no substance to it. Nobody actually believes in it. It doesn't come from anything real. It is just formal. It's just a shape,
Yes.
it's the correct shape to control people with no actual. And like the board must know that. Like they have to know that for this to function. I think we see that in Helena. Like Helena openly mocked the Keir stuff, which to me suggests that the top tiers don't believe it. But then the board does describe Mark's work as important. So I don't know. Oh, no, sorry, not the board, the whatever they are.
Oh, well, Mr. Drummond, he does it, he describes it.
Is that the big dude with the beard?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is he an Icelandic actor? He gives off big Icelandic vibes.
Yeah, no, I think I went Icelandic as well in my head. I don't know whether that's true, but he has that feel for sure, yeah.
Now, I don't know if this is a red herring, but he refers to who's the current Egan?
I don't know names very well.
But he's the fetid Moppet guy. Oh my God, I'm blanking on his
It's a
name, but
great
like,
line.
yeah. He hang on, what was I lost my train of thought now? What was I saying? Oh yeah. So Mr. Drummond, he referred to the current Egan as father in the same way that Helena did.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that is father as in the figurehead, the because
I'm very much thinking that the Egans aren't a literal family. I don't think they're necessarily, you know, genetic, you know, not progeny. Like it's clearly that it's a cult of sorts. I think cult would be the closest to it. It's a cult with indoctrination. Whether the top people believe it, because Helena does not seem to buy into it. She doesn't seem to believe it in any literal way. She scoffs at it openly. She mocks it. Whether Icelandic beard dude does is unclear.
What's his role, Mr. Drummond? Like,
I don't know what Helena's because you have the board, who we never see. And then you have the Egan family, which is separate from them, more like, I guess, CEOs, collective CEOs or something like that, or the C class,
Well,
whatever's.
I think this is part of the mystery, right? Now, I've heard online that the board is maybe the combined consciousnesses of the previous Egan administration, because like the various Egans. Now, that sounds a bit wacky, but the wing of and of statues, what's it called? The it begins with a P.
I know, yeah, again, not good
Yeah.
with names. Yeah.
Especially these weird made up word names.
Yeah.
They I mean in the show they go basically through them one by one, and it's like, is that I feel like they wouldn't necessarily do that unless it was entirely relevant that
Yeah,
they
but
each had a.
well, I, for me, it could lean into what you're saying, because I think what you're saying is perfectly plausible and valid, but it's contrary to my reading of it. To me, that's all bullshit. Like, these people never fucking existed. Like, it is just, it's the mytho, it's, you know, it's the genealogy, the fake genealogy to make you feel like you belong to something. You know, it's that. They were never real. Don't believe that Lumens is as old as, you know, when they that video in one of the recent episodes where they show us as a cabin in the same place, but they've got
Fuck, do you
locations
know?
all over the world, so.
You know that video, fun fact about that video, the voiceover in that video was Keanu Reeves. Okay, that's not
I'm not.
necessary. Fine.
I don't. Yeah, I
Fine.
know. Come on.
Medium level fact.
We're supposed to be excited. There's those sort of cultural things that we all have to agree that we like Beyonce. That's just taken as read in modern culture. And Keanu Reeves seems to be one of those. Like, everybody has to like. I don't dislike Keanu Reeves. I just never fucking think about him.
I don't think
And
about him a lot, but I think he seems like a nice guy. I mean,
he
he.
seems like a nice guy, but like, I'm not excited that he's in a thing. It's like when he was in Cyberpunk,
Oh,
and everyone
yeah.
went kind of, what? It's like, what? I don't quite get it.
I think because, well, I mean, he's had a hard life.
Well, no, yeah, sure, but there are thousands of actors who've had a hard life, right? That's not unique, but it's just he's been memeified, and then we all have to agree. And I don't like that kind of like groupthink kind of. You know, blindness to, because yeah, just the way people is, I think it's dying down a bit now, but the way people talk about Beyonce, like she's a fucking god figure of some sort. She made some pop songs.
There is one, like, we're
And
not
good
music
pop songs.
people, but I was there is one song where she does, like, there's like a game that music people play with one of her
Yeah.
songs, which is count the key changes, because apparently Beyonce can do a lot of key changes in a lot of songs. That's apparently quite impressive. I'm not a very good singer, so I'll take their word for it, but apparently.
Again, this is no, I'm not, you know, sort of pissing on her talent. She's a very talented pop singer, but there are, again, thousands of very talented pop singers. It's just this unquestioning, like, hagiography of certain celebrities, which kind of is what the show is talking about. That's what they're doing with Kian. That's the whole point. It's the unquestioning. That's the point, is the unquestioning, like, people just repeating, oh yeah, Beyonce's amazing. Like, do you, like, if you actually think that, that's totally cool. But do you actually think that? Does everybody just happen to think that all of a sudden?
Do you know what? If you, oh God, I might be opening up a fucking can of words here, but if you
Sure.
don't like Keanu Reeves or Beyonce, let us know through one of the usual channels that you can get in touch with us. Comment
Mean,
sections
see,
or
I kind of
whatever.
do. I do. Like, Keanu Reeves seems like a nice
I like
fella.
Keanu Reeves, yeah.
And I loved Bill and Ted back in the day, which is pretty much all I've seen him in. Yeah, he seems lovely in interviews, and like you say, he's had some troubles, and you know, that's identifiable. But I don't. It's the hagiography. It's the unquestioning elevation that I don't think we should do with anybody.
But, Keanu Reeves is mysterious and important, so. All right, so what do you think Cold Harbor is then?
I really haven't got a fucking clue. Like, you think it's like balancing the humors, and the humors being these emotions, which is complete, like I say, completely plausible. I just, for me, if it is that, then the show, I want the show to remain consistent in its critique, and for its critique to be cohesive. And for me, the way I'm reading it, if that is the case, it's undermining its own point. For the sake of being more sort of metaphysical, more mysterious, that to me is mystery for the sake of mystery, rather than being true to what it seems to be saying.
Okay. So one of the things that is very apparent about this world, if you pay a little bit of attention to it, is how the technology in it is wildly inconsistent. You know,
Yeah.
if you try and place it at a time in history, you can't, right? So
You're
Helena
talking
has
about
got.
the outside world.
Yeah, the outside world, yeah,
Yeah,
the outies
that's
world.
obviously true for the severed
In
floor.
it, yeah.
Like, it's explicitly true for the severed floor. But yeah, we were talking in chat the other day that it's also true for the outside world. Like, the cars from different eras, technology from different eras. They got phone booths. The places don't seem to be unless I've missed something, geographically specific. It's very odd, architecturally very odd in terms of like looking like a civic place. Nothing quite looks like the actual world.
No, like there's cars at varying times. Helene's got a smartphone, but whilst PT has like an old flip phone, right?
Yeah.
And whereas that is technically possible in today, for example.
Yeah.
It's narratively a bit peculiar. Like you'd usually stick with one or the other.
And Mark and Mrs. I can never remember her name. So Patricia Arquette.
Mrs. I want to say Mrs. Corbett.
Either of her names. Yeah, Mrs. Corbett.
Ms. Cobell or...
Cobell.
The other one, yeah. Let's call her Ms. Cobell.
Yeah, they kind of drive cars from the 80s, like an 80s. She's got like an 80s polo or golf
She's got... It's, okay, this is a bit on the nose. Yeah. She's got a car that I believe is called a Rabbit that is white.
Really?
So I don't know if that was
also, isn't it? Was it a nickname?
It's like one, like it's a small sensible hatchback, but I think
Volkswagen.
The name,
there is a Volkswagen badge on the front.
Oh, well, Volkswagen name a lot of their cars after animals.
Okay. Okay.
I've driven a Volkswagen Fox, which is also a very nice car to drive. It's like small, it's like a polo.
It's an 80s, either 80s or early 90s, hatchback. Mm. Mark's in a Volvo that looks like it's probably 90s. When Helene is getting picked up, she's in the car that looks like 60s, a 60s kind of, you know.
Yeah, but that was like a Rolls Royce, so...
No. I think it was an American sort of, like, not quite a muscle car, but like a 50s town car type car.
It had the, what they call suicide doors, you know, where the...
I remember that.
The rear passenger doors open up the other way.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They call them suicide doors because if you get out when the car's still moving, you fall under the door and die. So they're... but it looked lovely.
There's more modern cars around. I'm sure I've seen more modern cars. So yeah, it is a mishmash of technologies from different eras. And like, so it could be, and there's been multiple times where the natural phrasing would be on Earth. Like they say something like, this is the most important thing. And the natural phrasing would be on Earth, but they keep saying on this planet. Which...
Okay.
Mm. So then I go like, is it like the video game Prey? Is it like aliens trying to understand us? Is it post-apocalyptic? And this is like, they've replicated society and they're pretending this is how it's always been. Like, you know, it's run by a cult. Like, my mind's going to these sort of like quite out there ideas, but yeah. I mean it could be the place is very weird. Also,
well,
you know,
this
simulation
is, yeah, I mean, we could sort of play as allegory of the cave this a little bit, where you've got like the outy world is still a shadow version of a world above it, because we know that on the severed floor there's a world below the severed floor. So it might just be that there are various different tiers of reality getting nearer and nearer and nearer to the...
God, I hope it's not lost and it's not fucking purgatory, because I think they're intentionally sort of teasing that, but I hope it isn't that.
There's a lot of Lost references in the show. The lockers numbers that all the people on the severed floor use, like Irvin, Dillon and all that lot, they have numbers that are like the numbers in Lost. So there's nods and winks. Right. But again, that might just be like surely you can't do like nods and winks to Lost without knowing why everyone hates Lost. It could be
Lost,
that it's teasing us.
Lost was an important... I think it was a bad show, but it was an important and influential show. So, you know.
I think it had moments, but I haven't even finished it. So what can I say about it?
I've never watched that. I've read a decent amount about it and heard people talking about it a lot. I watched it when it came out, because the pilot was a huge deal. It was marketed to all shit. And I watched the pilot and just... I don't want to say like I'm super clever kind of thing, but I was just like, that's just going to be mysteries all the way through. Like I saw what it was doing, I think. That sounds like I'm aggrandizing myself. I don't mean it that way. I just think
I was a lot younger when it came out. Sorry, Drew. And it looked really interesting to me. And I got through to about maybe end of season 2 and I didn't like the flashbacks. I was always like, oh, I've got to sit through a flashback bit before we get back to the island.
You really don't like flashbacks, do you?
I think Lost was the thing that made me dislike flashbacks because overused them so much.
You were saying the other day that somebody's put together like a chronological version of Lost.
Yes.
Yeah, which could be interesting.
There's a temptation. It's called Chronologically Lost. I think if you search for it, you'll find it quite easily. There's a torrent of all the episodes. I don't know how they've like gotten away with being so public about it. And yeah, so you can allegedly start where they crash on the island and then watch down from that. And it basically, you know, some people say,
I've been thinking of giving Lost a watch through. No, knowing I'm probably not going to like it, but I'll probably enjoy aspects of it. Just because it is a big cultural. It's weird because nobody, broadly speaking, sort of respects it, but it had a lot of influence. It was quite, you know, it launched fucking careers.
Yeah. And yeah, there's a part of me that, do you know who actually likes Lost? And maybe we should talk with him about it. Is Jack, who we play D&D with.
I think we've spoken briefly about it. Yeah, there's been a couple of other people in chat on the Discord who've expressed a fondness for Lost. But I was listening to a Chapo thing about Lost. Chapo do a series called Something My Stories, I forget. And they look at a bunch of sort of influential TV shows and they characterize Lost. And this is something Ghosty said. Ghosty's not watched Severance, but he sort of pinned it as this. It's shows to make bourgeois people feel clever.
Okay.
So you feel like you're dealing with something substantial when there's actually nothing really. You know, there's nothing there, really.
Mid-brow, would you say?
It makes you feel clever. Maybe. Does that fit into mid-brow? Maybe, yeah. Yeah, I guess it's middle-brow. Yeah. But, you know, you can go to work, you can talk about it around the water cooler, have theories. So you feel like you're doing something clever because you're having theories.
Yeah.
But eventually it becomes clear that these theories, it's just arbitrary. It's just a bunch of arbitrary symbols that you can arrange pretty much in any way you like. Very quickly to finish that thought, just like, so Lost very much was that. Severance might be that. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So I don't think Severance is that, but God, I may end up eating those words. You do know, like, I really hope I don't. I might just give up TV at that point. Like,
I was cautiously optimistic at the end of the first show, the first season. I enjoyed it a great deal and talked about it a lot, but I was aware that there was this potential problem. And season two, for me, so far has reinforced the problem.
Mm.
Like, the second half could turn that around and give me, you know, something meaningful. But so far, that's kind of the problem. With a few pinpoint exceptions, it is so far devoid of actual meaning, and at some point you need some meaning,
right? As opposed to just mystery. You got mystery, you got meaning. Just
questions, yeah. I mean, we're watching The Expanse and doing space versions, obviously, and The Expanse. Like I say, I don't necessarily need everything answering, but The Expanse does answer everything. You have the big arcs, and you have the little mysteries, and they all get new mysteries are thrown up, and new questions are created from the knowledge you get of, you know, the previous mystery. Like, it opens up more questions, but it isn't just like teasing you. It's I don't know what the correct words to use, because sometimes an open mystery, something left mysterious, is good. Sometimes it's unsatisfying.
So as with so many shows, it's all about whether or not it sticks to landing, I guess, really.
But not just, because I don't just want a bunch of answers at the end.
Yeah.
I want to feel like I'm learning about this place. And during season one, I felt like I was learning about this place, you know, place, situation, whatever. Season two, I don't feel like I've learned anything new. It's just character stuff.
Yeah.
I want it to be good, and I'm still borderline optimistic about it, but I'm worried. I'm concerned. I have concerns.
I hope we don't finish recording here and all of those concerns have transferred onto me, because I'm optimistic, and I don't know if this means that I might be just more. I don't know. I don't know which one of us might be more easily satisfied. Like, if they answer the mysteries, I might just be fine with it. Like, I kind of hope
Yeah.
it's
Sorry,
one
go
of
on.
these things where I hope I'm wrong with the mystery. Like, I hope that what I guess is wrong, but it's something that I didn't think about, but the clues were still there.
Well, there is a satisfaction that comes from getting the right answer, but I think the most satisfying thing is when you're sort of in the right direction but didn't see it all, because then you still get a little bit surprised, but you get the endorphins or whatever from guessing it somewhat correctly, being on the right track.
Now, okay, so I want to go back and su support my one of my theories about resurrecting Kia. So, you know, I think there are clues in the opening scene. And I think one of the clues that you see is that you see, I think he wakes up on a bed or something. And there are a lot like little baby Kia Egans like crawling around.
Okay.
And
Yeah.
that
I tend
kind
to
of.
skip through. I fucking hate intros on shows now. Apple are the Apple. Most other places have learned, just do a little sort of sting or like title, a quick title. We don't need long ass fucking animations anymore. And Apple still do these tedious CGI fucking animations. But there might be meaning in it. Go on.
So there's one where there's like where he so I'm looking at it now where he wakes up on the bed and there's like a baby with like a Kia Egan's face crawling around, which leads me to believe, I don't know what like
My
does that
problem with
lead
that,
to
this is a bit meta, but okay, so in a nutshell, the potential problem could be the problem with Lost was that they didn't know where they were going. They didn't have an idea, they had a question. They had a mysterious situation. They didn't have a full idea. In order for the animators to be given enough information to do something meaningful at the beginning, they'd have to know where this was going entirely and have told the animators that. And every step of that seems unlikely to me. I don't think I know of a TV show where the intro is usually just an animator. I mean, I've sort of worked in this kind of stuff and I know how it works. You're just given sort of thematic things. You're given visuals that occur in the show and then a thematic kind of overview. And then an animator just gets creative with that, and I'm wary of reading too much in to anything in the animation.
Well,
But I could be wrong. They could know exactly where they're going. They told the animators what the point of the show was, and then they did it, a sort of subtle hint towards that, but it's possible.
okay, so I agree. I agree that that is the like the a good assumption, but there are like lots of references to like really weird little stuff in the show. So for example, you know, in we see in at the beginning of the late of episode 5, Mark has a bunch of like eggnog looking bottles in his fridge to help him
Yes,
with
yeah.
the
I
they're
didn't
in the
know what
intro.
they are. Oh, they are, okay. See,
So there's
I'm increasingly thinking that the outie world is not the real world. Whether it's a tier below or whether it's just something weird in itself, I don't know, but that is not the real world.
Oh, man, I don't know. The thing that makes me think that it's not the real world is the inconsistent technology. The fact that there's like only one diner, that there's only that like half of the street that Mark lives on is unoccupied.
And the fact that so the innies don't have a complete picture of like how the real world works, the real world, the outie world, how it works. Like again, during that I rewatched the scene yesterday. The wellness thing with Irving, he's told that he enjoys films and he's got a machine for playing them. And it's things like that that the innies don't know. They don't know that there are machines for playing films. They don't have that kind of knowledge. But that seems to extend to the outie world. They don't seem to have a complete. The world seems to work differently to how our real world does, and they seem unaware of that and unaware that it could or should work in a different way. So I think they are in some kind of false reality in some way.
Yeah, it could like. Do you know there is one? There's a little bit of evidence that questions that idea, which is so on the season 2, episode 1, where they have the three new people. They are so when Mark, I think he's walking into Lumen, you see Mark W, the other Mark with the bow tie and the suspenders, arguing with someone on, like a bodyguard or someone on the outside, saying, "What, fired after day one? I broke a lease in Grand Rapids for this." Grand Rapids, of course, an actual place in the real world. However, when Miss Cobell, she drives off at the end of episode one, so I think that's in episode... No, at the end of episode two, so in episode three, she goes all the way and she hits a sign that... I can't remember what that sign says, but it's not a real place. And then she turns around and then comes back.
So I'm very curious as to what's going on with her.
Yeah. Was she trying to escape this mythic realm or whatever it is that they're in? Or because Grand Rapids is it's a real place and it's one of the few real places, maybe the only real place that was ever uttered in the entirety of the show.
Yeah, it's also a very generic.
Yep.
I mean, is there? I want to check now. Is there only one Grand Rapids?
And then they mention that the other two were from a branch called 5X. So okay, Grand Rapids is in Michigan.
There's four Grand Rapids in Canada and six-ish in the US. So yeah, very generic. I like that, that's not to dismiss you. It is clearly a real. Yeah, it is the only real place we've heard of for sure. And presumably, it's the most well-known one that they're referring to. But also, you know, it's a bit. It's Twin Peaks. It's Grand Rapids. It's a very easy. It's Sudden Valley. A very easy. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the waterfall? The waterfall seems to be part of Keir's symbology, so Grand Rapids, I don't know.
Oh, actually, yeah, that was something that goes in your favour. So when we were on episode four, where they go on their mysterious Ort bow, the another one of their weird mythic terms, we learn about another Egan. What one's that one called? The brother of Keir Egan, who... comes on the soil. Woe's Hollow, that's the name of the episode. And
well, they also Milchick, that waterfall that they encounter, which is a very sort of regular waterfall, he says it's the tallest waterfall in the world.
Milchick does say that,
which is a very fucking weird thing to say,
which is obviously not true.
And is it just he can get away with that because the innies don't know any better, so it aggrandizes it? Or is there something weirder going on? I also want to say, these kind of shows that invite theorizing.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people enjoy them by, you know, reading fan theories and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, going on the Reddit and seeing what people are saying about the show. I don't like doing that. I do not do that.
I love it. I love that.
Yeah. And I'm not saying one's better than the other. Yeah. It's just I like to just have my own experience of it and then read about it later. But from some very light Googling, the main thing that this season people seem concerned with was Helena's identity, which I don't think is a particular.
No,
it's not particularly mysterious. It's very clear.
Yeah.
And secondly, not hugely interesting in itself. Its implications could be interesting, but.
Yeah. I'm totally with you on that one. Like, it to me, it was kind of obvious that it was Helena up until the point where Irvin drowns her.
Yeah. And part of the point of this season is Irving slowly sort of working that out, which is cool because it's a nice character moment for him.
Irvin's had some great character moments.
I will say, I don't think Helena is all bad. I think she's, my impression, and again, this is kind of the problem with shows like this, is you can read in so much almost without limits because you're given so little.
Yeah.
But I think she's experienced friendship for the first time.
Yeah, no, or love in some, you might think. Love,
friendship, your companion, you know, actual human. And again, that's a comment on corporate, you know, it's essentially equating a corporation with a cult. And saying you can't have true human relationships in a structure like that. But when she's on the floor with the workers, she actually experiences camaraderie and friendship and shared purpose for the first time in her life. And I think that's changed her.
Yeah, that, I think that's that's a very interesting point, but I do think it's true because to me, it was very obvious when it was Helena and when it was Heliar.
Yeah, the characters in the show are being tricked, but we're kind of given all the information. We know what's happening there.
Yeah, and we knew from the moment. Well, to me, I thought, oh, she lied, so she's not out. A few people worked it out quite as well because there's no Bing on her lift when she came in, which was kind of like a nod. Also, there was that awkward, like, do we kiss, do we not kiss moment. And the fact that it was awkward kind of, yeah, makes it very clear that it was Helena, really. So, yeah, to me, that was not a mystery. And I find it that might be your ghosty opinion of making bourgeois people think they're smart. That's like that's the entry level mystery that some people
I
can
mean,
have.
that's not
But there's
that sounds very what's the
condescending.
no, I want to say condemnation, but as a
Yeah.
past tensey, a condemnatory. Condemning. Anyway, I don't necessarily mean it as that. Those they can be fun. Like there's nothing inherently wrong with that necessarily, so long as it's got some, it just needs some substance to it, essentially, is all. Like
Yeah.
sorry, there's what I'm slightly distracted because there was a thing in season two. There's a bit where, and I took a screenshot. Oh, did I fail to take a screenshot? It looks like I failed to take a screenshot. There's a bit where, because we're not talking about Miss Wong, is it? Miss Wong.
Yeah, that's it, Miss Wong, yeah.
That's weird, but again, it's just there's not a lot to say. It's just that's weird.
Yes.
But there's a bit where she goes to, as they do with the passes, open a door,
Yeah.
and there's a close up of her hand. They do this a lot, actually. The putting the cards in the door seems to be symbolically important, maybe, or maybe it's just setting. Anyway, it close ups on her hand, and to me, that hand doesn't look like the hand of a young girl when they do the close up on the hand, which freaked me out. But I might be misreading.
Ah.
And apparently, I forgot to take the screenshot.
It could,
Or
I mean, it might be the case. It might be a continuity error, and it might be, oh no, we forgot to film Miss Wong's hand going in, so let's just use someone who looks vaguely similar, who has a vaguely similar hand.
it just looked like a bit more wrinkly and a bit more worn than I don't know how old.
Okay, here's a theory, just off the top of my head, that might be complete bull. She's not actually a child. She is Miss Casey aged down.
That's where I've been going, like Miss Casey, because I'm wondering, and I keep wondering whether there's a temporal thing going on. Like people from the past can exist in the severed floor, who can't exist, but when they go into the real world, it does seem to be temporally coherent.
Yeah.
They're all present as far as we can tell. All the people in the severed floor are present in the present of the
Well, not
external world
well, of sorts.
it's, that we've seen.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought maybe it's a younger version of Miss Casey, or aged down Miss Casey, or Casey and Mark's child is another
Yeah,
thought I had
there's
for the
another
future.
option. Yeah.
Or this could be racism just because she's Asian.
It could be that, if you want to go down the purgatory route, it could be that she's just a child who died. Because in on the severed floor, right, Miss Casey tells us that she's only been alive for like 100 hours. So if you're a child or if you're an adult, in a lot of ways, the chances are you could have had you have equatable lifespans in a lot of cases.
There was a bit
So
that made there was a line that made me laugh when it's I think it's Mark's new team,
yeah.
and one of them, I think other Mark, asks Miss Casey, why are you so young? Or
Why you a child?
why are you a child? And she says, because of when I was born, which made me laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish I had that close up of the hand because, yeah, I want to know whether
It
I'm just
could be the
reading
case that, like, because at the beginning of season one, Milchick and Kobel are both non-severed individuals managing the floor. I find it hard to believe that Miss Casey is not a severed individual.
now. Oh, for
Right?
sure.
She's got to be a severed individual. So unless there could be something else, but maybe, but like, it just seems so likely that she's a severed individual. And maybe they just want to replace the entire floor with severed individuals one by one. Milchick seems to be butting heads with the higher CEOs or the board of directors, and he might be next on the chopping block, replaced by another severed employee, so that the severed floor then becomes entirely insulated from the world above it.
Yeah, that's the stuff. I'm resistant to speculate too much about that stuff, again, because we've got so little to go on that it could be literally fucking anything. I really want to know what Cobell is up to. I want to know more about Helena and what's going on in her head. But I'm really... Cobell seems to kind of be on Mark's side, is my read of that. But I've got very little to go on for that. I did take the screenshot. It didn't upload for some reason. But there's a...
Okay.
Does that look like it could just be a child hand?
Let's have a look. Right, okay. Right, how do I do this? Up there, what do we got? Oh, there. That could be a child's hand. Sorry, people on the thing are only getting a bit of it. hang on a minute.
Watch this completely legitimate on Apple TV. I just have a custom interface.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. If
I just saw that hand, I was asked, how old is the person whom Zist's hand that is? I would say 30 to 40. But maybe she just has a dry hand. I don't want to piss on the hand. Maybe you just got dry.
It might be the case, and this is maybe sapping a bit of mystery out of it, that, you know, obviously we know that, I don't even know how old she is, like, but, you know, if she's, you know how there's, like, a lot of laws around child actors? So it might be the case that, like, it's just, like...
On a show like this where everything's a clue, I think they would be... I think we have to assume everything is with intent, but... I think it's either intentional and that is not a young person's hand, or this young lady just has hands that don't look very young.
I think another thing as well is that, so we're talking about this theory that you don't believe about Kia being resurrected. It could be that this is a Miss Casey clone or a clone of someone else. Who obviously is not at full maturity yet.
Yeah, quite possibly. You could be right about the whole cloning thing. Whether the whole thing is a simulation, whether it's on an alien planet, whether it's post-apocalyptic and this weird corporation/cult has taken over the world and has little gated communities, whether it's a literal biological clone. I no fucking idea. But it's what you're saying is absolutely plausible. Yeah,
the town of Kia doesn't. Also, there's the newspaper that was presented to Mark in the first episode of the season two, which was clearly a fake newspaper.
Yes, yeah.
Although I gotta be honest, I am absolutely I'm in love with the idea that Rick and Hale's book is considered a profound masterpiece in...
That's another reason why I don't think that real world is our real world, because we as the audience, we're being banged over the head with the idea this is a terrible fucking book.
Yes.
Like, abysmal. Like, he's an idiot.
Yeah.
And his book has had some... Not just... it seems to have had some success aside from, the interesting stuff that's going on with it. I love Mark's reaction to the idea that his innie found meaning in that book. That's very funny as well.
Yeah, but also, if you are an innie in the world that they are, you might find genuine.
It's a little bit of a comment. It's like when you're in your young teens and you start to get interested in maybe philosophy or something, and you read, you read the real bottom basement stuff and the self help stuff and think it's very profound and it's that, right? It's naive.
Jordan Peterson fans, basically, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Or in our day, 15-year-olds that read Ayn Rand. You know,
it's a little bit embarrassing. I still have a bit of regard for him, but for me, it was Alan Watts. He was a very sort of hippie-ish Eastern philosophy.
My edgy read was Machiavelli. I really enjoyed The Prince.
No, Machiavelli is genuine. Interesting. Machiavelli is fucking great. Yeah. Machiavelli's not embarrassing at all. Yeah.
Mm. I yeah I I obviously, I read Orwell at a weirdly young age, but it didn't
Orwell's
quite
another
click.
Orwell's another one, yeah. Orwell's
Yeah.
going on for that, yeah.
Orwell didn't quite do it for me because I felt Orwell to be a bit, oh, I don't know, of his time, I guess. A
Just to be
little
clear
bit.
about Orwell, he was a piece of shit. He was kind of flirt. He was a very upper middle class dude who kind of flirted with socialism and blah blah blah. But he worked for the British government to undercover socialists in, almost McCarthyish kind of stuff, and undercover and uncover gay people. He would report gay people to the government as, they're susceptible to, infiltration and blah blah. He was an absolute fucking Tory
I
boy piece of shit underneath
didn't
everything.
know that about Orwell. I had him as
Yeah.
like a what they refer to on very online spaces now as a classical liberal.
Yeah, that's the thing. He was really, but he thought he was a socialist at times, but then he wrote this book that's read as, an anti-authoritarian, anti-communist perhaps, but anti-authoritarian book, and then he's literally dobbing people into the fucking British government for being gays and communists. Like he is doing the he's literally being Big Brother. Like he is just a hypocritical Tory boy, spoiled piece of shit, and nobody should have any regard for fucking George Orwell. Also, not that good a writer.
I didn't think 84 was particularly good. I thought, to be honest, I thought Animal Farm kind of basically was the full extent of his ideas in a better format.
Well, you know the version of Animal Farm that was sort of made into an animated film in the US? That was heavily edited with Orwell's agreement, I think, by the CIA. Literally by the CIA. They made it. The book is less anti-communist and more, two forms of authoritarianism. They're both bad, blah blah blah. Authoritarianism bad. But yeah, the film version is far more specifically anti-communist because it was very heavily edited by
Yeah, but then of course, I
CIA.
mean, all well, like Ayn Rand, I guess, is like a lot of people, and also these like mythic figures like Keir Egan, people like often infer their own beliefs through their lens. Is that the right
Yeah,
way
yeah,
of thinking of
yeah.
it? Like.
I think he had some interesting observations. The double speak thing was very apt. The perpetual war thing was very apt. But I think he's invested with more cleverness than. In fact, this is a very sort of cliched and trite thing to say, but Aldous Huxley's Brave New World way better than 1984.
I haven't read that, but the people I know who would agree with that leads me to think that I would probably agree with that.
Again, I think that's also a bit overrated. It's not as clever as people want to think it is, but it is more clever than 1984.
One of the things going back to your idea about Keir Starmer not being a real person, Keir Egan not being a real person, is that when they go to Woese Hollow in the woods on the outdoor retreat, so this new Egan is invented effectively in the secret appendix that up until now no one has ever known about. And then, of course, Helena laughs it off around the campfire because she probably knows, oh, this is just a story that's made up. So they might invent Egans as every time they need,
Well, it's corporate, yeah, it's corporate. It's corporate mythologizing, corporate culture, corporate, yeah. All the yeah, googliness, it's Ronald McDonald, it's Mavis Beacon, it's to me saying you're gonna resuscitate Keir Egan is like you're gonna resuscitate, Uncle Ben, who doesn't exist anymore because I rebranded. But yeah, I mean, I know I'm not saying you're unaware. You're saying not necessarily resuscitation. You're saying construct the idea of him as a being. Yeah, no, I get that, and it's maybe I do think it undercuts the point of the show a little bit though. But then I could be misreading the show.
Is Lloyd Grossman still alive?
Think so.
Because
Have you
he's
ever
a.
really Have you ever really had a full grasp on what Lloyd Grossman is? He's one of those people who doesn't seem like a re he seems like he seems like a Keir Egan. He seems like a constructed being that I don't entirely understand, that has no history, or he's an odd.
Through the keyhole and the sources.
The old Master Chef. He seems to be still alive.
So maybe what they're doing is they're adding the Hamburglar to their list of Lumen.
Always loved
They could.
Hamburglar as a kid. A character who just loves hamburgers and steals them. I fully identify.
Yeah, well, it's
My hero.
living the dream, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. So yeah, the what do you think about the retreat? Is the retreat so the retreat is that in the real world, or is that in a simulation, or
I don't
because
think it's the real world. When you've got their doppelgangers pointing, like there's something going on there, right? And it just feels unreal. But again, everything in the show feels unreal. Again, this is the fucking problem. This is what worries me. But there's so little to go on. You can speculate in either direction and make a case.
Mm. So, is there not instances where Mark S., doesn't he get an injury or a cold or something? They're talking in episode five.
Oh, he's been coughing. He's been coughing.
It.
Both as an innie, as an outie. Yeah, there's something going on with that, but I'm not sure what.
Oh, but it could be the alt bow.
I don't think so. It's a very dry cough. It's a very particular cough that our attention is being drawn to. That clearly has some meaning, but I don't know what it is. Mm.
So I think I know what the Glasgow block is, what Milchick refers to when he says remove the Glasgow block and then Heli R comes back in from Helena.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in the last episode of season one, when Dylan selected the overtime contingency from the list of things, there were a few other things there. There was and they give clues, but one of them was Glasgow.
Well, I assume the Glasgow block is just the reverse of the other thing, where it prevents you from being severed as you enter the seventh floor. I don't think that's.
But the question is so it's the other way around. It's like if you are in a severed area like the severed floor and you remove the Glasgow block, then you sort of default, the block stops you from being severed.
Mm.
So yeah, it's like the reverse. So if Outie Mark wanted to look inside the severed floor, he would use the Glasgow block to go in. So maybe that's what we might see from another character like Irvin. Because
We've got Mark's bringing the two together-y thing going on, haven't we?
Yes. So he might. So the Glasgow block might, or the lack of a Glasgow block might get in the way of that. So presumably in the world of the town of Kia, when Dylan was in sort of towards the end of the first season, when Dylan was approached by Milchick when he was at home.
Yeah.
Using the overtime contingency. So Dylan was hit at home, right? So there's some range to how this severance contingency can work.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm going to guess that it doesn't work outside of this mysterious Kia bubble of the town of Kia.
Yeah, that's another thing I don't know.
So it could be that. So yeah, it does seem like the Ortbo is in a fictional environment. Plus, you know, there's obvious things like the TV at the beginning doesn't have any power cables and stuff like that.
Another question of that sort is, why is it only Mark's work that is important? We have nothing really on that. Like, clearly the rest of the team, I mean, they say explicitly they're just there to keep Mark working. Why is it only Mark that?
Well, Milchick, I think it's Milchick, says that they want. That they need to bring back Mark's original team to keep him motivated.
Well, exactly, but why is he the only one who's doing real work, it seems like?
Because it's Miss Casey, his I say ex-wife, or...
Right, okay. Yeah.
But it might not just be. It might be that the others, like, for example, I don't know, like... It could be that Mark needs to experience all of the humours. Maybe each of the other of the characters in the square represent a humour. And maybe now that Irvin's sort of died, or any Irvin's died.
Probably. Yeah, this is my problem now. Now it is just we've got so little to go on, just symbols. It is just pure restricted speculation.
All right. Okay. All right. All right. Let's. Okay. Reining in the unrestricted. The term you just used. All right. Let's do a prediction, and we'll come back and see who's right.
Yeah.
Okay. So you think that this is just. So I'm going with Keir Starmer coming back from the dead.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Well, I'm going to go with my most ridiculous one, which is kind of what I want it to be because it'd be fun. Mm-hmm. I think this is aliens trying to understand humans. Fuck it. We're like,
okay.
We're many thousands of years in the future. Aliens have, you know, it's almost the Matrix.
Okay. Resurrection versus aliens.
The Matrix.
Matrix. Cool. All right. All right. Should we wrap it up there?
Yeah. I think anymore. We could just speculate endlessly, but it is just, I'm reluctant. The show's not giving me enough for me to dignify it with that much speculation. You know what I mean? I need something more to grab onto.
For me, and this might be falling down the last hole again, it's been a long time since there's a show, maybe like House of the Dragon or something, so maybe not that long of time, where it's been like I've been waiting week to week with quite an eagerness. So I'm hoping they stick the landing. I don't
quite
care how...
eagerness.
With quite the eagerness. And honestly, just as long as it feels cathartic, that's all I want out of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm okay. Like I say, I'm okay with open mystery so long as there's something. So long as there's something going on. It's not just empty.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've made me more optimistic. I hope I haven't dragged you down. I never want to drag people down when I'm criticizing things. It's like, if you're enjoying a thing and I'm not, that's fucking great.
It's the only thing that could drag me down is if they botch it. Like,
I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt for now. I'm still am, yeah.
Yeah, I think there are legitimate clues and legitimate mysteries, and I think that once, hopefully, fingers crossed, once it's all worked out, we'll see a lot of the clues in hindsight, which I always think on maybe a second watch or something.
I do hope so, yeah. So, yeah. But anyway, all right. let's
cut it. Wrap it up. All right, fingers crossed. Toodaloo.